Glitter Day is a holiday we came up with to give folks a chance to unwind after the tense winter holiday season and celebrate joy in their everyday lives.
On Glitter Day, all you gotta do is do anything you feel like doing. So why has every Glitter Day seemed to coincide with some kind of catastrophe?
Today, we're taking a look at the Hawaii missile crisis that took place on this year's Glitter Day, which set off widespread panic in a state that was already on the edge because of escalating tensions between the United States and North Korea. What would you do if you thought the world was going to end?
Plus, at the unveiling of her star at the Hollywood Walk of Fame, musician Mary J. Blige reveals she was homeless in 2016 after filing for divorce.
Do you need penis whitening?
Scientists develop a pill that measures how a fart develops in your intestines.
And a sex doll company announces new realistic trans robots. They're just like trans people. You can take them home to meet your family, but you'll have a little bit of explaining to do. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
For 14 years now, Feast of Fun has brought you great conversations with some of the world's most interesting artists, because people like you took time out of their day to support this one-of-a-kind show. Ensure our future together. Visit feastoffun.com/plus and become a member, or make a donation at feastoffun.com/donate. Thank you. What is this, Hobo Mountain time?
In the old Candy Mountain. Da-da. Oh, Susanna.
I had no idea you could play the harmonica. When did that happen?
I've always known how to play the harmonica. I've just never done it before.
What do you mean? So you've already always known, but you've never done it?
Yes. This is the first time I just pulled that out. I was like, hey, I can play the harmonica. Watch this.
After 14 years, you bust out the harmonica that's been sitting. I feel like
rusty.
We got that gift from a listener, I believe, right?
Yep.
Yeah, in the early days of the podcast, people, you know, well, the people still send us stuff, but, you know, we used to, you know, a lot of those bells and whistles and stuff all come from people.
It all comes from the magic of you, our dear listeners, who send us things and drive the rest of the listeners crazy.
If you want to send us something, you can send it to Feast of Fun at 5315 North Clark Street, number 242, Chicago, Illinois, 60640. Yeah, lots of noisemakers. That came from somebody.
Yeah, it was a listener in Australia who was sick and tired of us going ding.
The slide whistle. Story.
The ding, the call, the it's harp. A call bell.
Mm-hmm. Service bell.
A service bell or call bell, yeah. Not cow bell, was a reference to RuPaul's Drag Race, the introduction where they have a car racing, vroom, and then RuPaul's laughter, and then a bell in the background. But so anyways, the reason I play the harmonica in the beginning is because Glitter Day is all about unlocking your creativity, your hidden talents that are nestled, tucked away deep in the crevices of your mind, but you're just too darn busy, too darn overwhelmed to relax and let them bubble to the surface.
Well, you spend so much time with the holidays with your family, worrying about birthday presents, and then New Year's Eve, there's all that pressure to go out and, you know, spend a lot of money in a restaurant or a fancy meal and spend money drinking in a bar. And so Glitter Day is just a day to get away from all of that and just do what it is you want to do.
But the holiday seasons always feel, especially the winter holidays, you know, you've watched Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Winter's coming.
Winter's
here, actually.
Winter's here, but winter in Game of Thrones is kind of a ominous presence. There's going to be a death. There's going to be pain and suffering. And so a lot of the winter holiday festivals and events are meant to cheer people up, to get them happy.
It's the darkest time of the year, so people get depressed. They have low vitamin D.
That's right. You got to get some sunshine either from the sun, or you get it through a pill, or you get it from your heart.
Or from a really hot guy. Get that the good vitamin D.
The vitamin dick. But just like those tireless searches for vitamin D on hookup apps, and we'll get to that a little bit later in the show, it always seems to end in calamity, in sadness and isolation. Maybe that's just a natural state of being. You know, winter is a gloomy season, and spring is the opposite of that.
Well, you know, also too, with the holidays, is like older people sometimes it's like they get through Christmas and then they die right afterwards.
Yeah, I've gone to many funerals that took place during the holiday season, which was very convenient, you know, to be able to visit your family and then be like, this bury lovely aunt, this godmother, this family member passes away right around that time period, and you just happen to be there and back home in town so you can go to their funeral and reflect on their lives and you know, understand the compassion, the contribution, the love that you got from that person to your life. And so we created Glitter Day to try to be this festive holiday, but every now and then it's like somebody died or something horrible happened. And this year was no different. I guess I'm calling it the Hawaii Missile Crisis, where accidentally announcements on people's smartphones were saying that missiles had been launched. And to basically buckle up because the end was near.
And people took it, of course, they took it very seriously because, you know, I get some of those. Serious. I get those for like, you know, flood warnings, amber alerts, that kind of thing. So they popped up on people's phones and they're like, you know, people freaked out because in Hawaii, they were like, they're already on edge because they're the closest place to North Korea. So if anybody's going to send missiles, it's going to be North Korea.
This is what the statement on people's smartphones had said. Emergency alert. Ballistic missile threat inbound to Hawaii. Seek immediate shelter. This is not a drill. It's worth pointing out that this took place on Saturday, and as of Monday, President Trump has not yet acknowledged it at all.
Well, could you imagine if something like this had happened under Obama? Oh my God, it would be nonstop.
Yeah.
Fox and everybody and tweets and everything would be crazy. Like, Obama's not prepared. We're indefensible. You know, anybody could come and attack us. Our shield wall is down. Star Wars is over. Like, it's nuts.
And so, you know, I think like a lot of people are very rightfully distressed and there's still an investigation trying to find out, was this a hoax? Was this a malfunction?
Well, somebody, I guess, pressed the wrong button or something like that. Right. But there was no like there was nothing to be like, are you sure this is the button you want to press? There was nothing like any kind of confirmation for it.
What's fascinating or sad is that our telecommunications industry, like AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon, the phone company, Ma Bell, have been lobbying the government to defund the testing of emergency broadcast systems like this one. And so this is why this stuff is happening. It's a false alarm. And of course, it's worth pointing out that had this false alarm been taken seriously by the powers that be, it could have launched us into an actual global thermonuclear war. People and a lot of people in Hawaii thought they were going to die.
Yeah. You know, I feel bad for up there. Some people, I guess, they took shelter in like tunnels. I guess some of the tunnels go through mountains. So they just like parked in the tunnel and they're like, we're not leaving. And so they, you know, they blocked up traffic and eventually they got people to move, be like, it's a false alarm. You can move. Because it went on for like 38 minutes or something. Right?
I'm guessing there's people in Hawaii still right now who are in their fallout shelters and have not come out yet.
I would think that they would like have some
Cloverleaf
kind of
Avenue. What is that Cloverleaf movie where the second John one? Goodman,
Cloverleaf 2 or something?
Yeah, the sequel. He locks himself in his bunker.
Right, in the bunker in the basement. You know, there's probably some people that are, I don't know, I would think most people by now, they would get it. You know, they have wireless radios down there. They have all sorts of stuff. And so they probably figure it out.
Maybe
you know,
he may have been in a hoax. Maybe he wouldn't trust it. Maybe it is, this is part of the alien invasion of the propaganda in North Korea. North Korea won the war. And so they might be still locked in that chamber.
They'll come out like 25 years or something in 50 years and we're like, what happened?
And so the internet's full of stories like a man texting a female friend that he loved her and she replied, me too, I love you too.
Aww.
And then when the alarm was over, She said she just did it because they thought she thought they were both going to die.
Is that true? Really? She's so she doesn't really love him. So she's not going to get any vitamin D from him.
No vitamin D, honey. Mm. Some people opened up a bottle of wine that they had and then just drank it all up. You know, they were there was reports of a senior citizen, an older gentleman, locked himself up in his pantry and just started eating all the bread.
Might as well go out eating. You know, what would you do? It's like, do you eat? Do you have sex? Do you jerk off? What, you know, what are you going to do? It's you have 38 minutes or how long before the end of the world is coming.
Well, and it's unfortunate because I always tell people, it's like, you know, live your life as if those bombs are going to mm-hmm. happen. I mean, you and I grew up watching The Day After, mm-hmm. which was a television miniseries, I guess, on that explored what would happen in the United States and rural America mm-hmm. if we were,
not just rural America, everywhere. But it was absolutely terrifying. And they say when I was growing up in the 80s that the number one cause of teenage suicide was the threat of nuclear annihilation. Now, I don't know if that's really true nowadays, because now I think that, you know, they may have been covering up for other things. You know, probably there's probably a lot of LGBT suicide because we knew that that's always kind of been an issue. Was that threat. I mean, when I was a little kid, they would even have us hide under desks sometimes. Be like, okay, so if like something happens, would you everybody get under your desk?
Did you actually rehearse getting underneath your desk?
Sure.
Well, I actually did have to get underneath my desk one time.
For what?
Because the ceiling in my classroom, the whole building collapsed.
What?
So I went to a school that is no longer business called San Juan School by the Sea.
Now it's San Juan School in the sea, right?
Under the sea, honey. Just, but not as romantic as The Little Mermaid. And I guess we're at school as a hurricane winds were developing. And the ceiling had rusted enough that part of the... It happened right in front of us. Part of the ceiling started to collapse inside mm-hmm. the schoolroom mm-hmm. and the school teacher's like, everyone get underneath your desk now. Mm. And it was like, and then all the lighting units, there were big, heavy things hanging in a drywall ceiling, started collapsing on top of students in the desks. Mm. And it was like, boom, boom. It sounded like the lockers had fallen. And we were just like terrified. And then, you know, immediately like the school teacher was like, get out of the building. Everybody run out now. Hurry, hurry. Of course, we got to go home from school. And I developed at a young age a taste for danger. And, you know, because I was like, hey, we're supposed to get a math test. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, we almost died, but we don't have to take the test. And so a lot of kids growing up in, at least in Puerto Rico, for at least for my generation, we had a very romantic notions of hurricanes and disasters because we're like, at least you don't have to go to school. That's how bad school sucks for kids, that they rather die in a hurricane or in a missile crisis than have to go to school.
And that for us was snow days, because even like if it was snowy out and cold and we got a lot of snow in Erie, at least you could always go out and play for a little bit. Sometimes it would be really cold, so you didn't want to be out there for too long.
And I imagine that it causes a lot of chaos, and chaos is not good for the environment. It's not good for an economy. It's not good for civilization. Mm-hmm. I think in World War II, there was a very famous ad campaign that the British government started putting up all these posters that said, keep calm and carry on. Do you know anything about that?
Well, the whole idea is, you know, London at the time was under the Blitzkrieg, so the Germans were bombing the city. And, you know, you want to keep people, their morale up. You want to keep them concentrated on going to work and doing their thing and not freaking out. Because, you know, if somebody's freaking out in your vicinity, that just kind of spreads. And then it can be just widespread panic. So you just keep calm and carry on.
I remember during the events of September 11th, when President Bush finally spoke, he said very, sort of awkwardly or disturbingly, just keep shopping, everybody. Remember that?
I do remember that. It was his version of keep calm and carry on, right?
And, you know, during the HIV and AIDS crisis, I knew a lot of gay men who maxed out credit cards or started cashing in their health insurance policies because a lot of people felt like they weren't going to live for very long. Mm-hmm. And I had one particular friend who had maxed out six different credit cards, and he was like, I didn't die. So well, he had to declare bankruptcy.
Yeah, I work out at the gym with a guy, and he helped people cash in their life insurance policies. And, you know, and for a lot of people, you know, some people needed it, and then other people, they survived. And so they got this money from their life insurance policy. But, you know, when they die, no, they're not going to get it. You know,
Calamities, is it natural disasters? We have a couple of movies like The Day After Tomorrow and Armageddon, all these films.
Airport 77.
Yeah. Movies where people are sort of like with their loved ones and they're standing by the beach waiting for the tsunami to drown the world. And, you know, in some ways, like an apocalypse is romantic. Mm-hmm. It's an escape from the problems of your life. You know, it's great.
All your problems are solved, right?
Yeah, you don't have to go to work the next day because you're dead. But then again, so is the rest of the world. You know, so in some ways, you know, when I hear like Christian fundamentalists or religious fundamentalists of any kind talk about Armageddon or an apocalypse, to me, it's always like the laziest get out of jail free card.
Well, because they're kind of looking for, like, I'm not looking forward to Armageddon or the apocalypse. I don't think it's going to be fun. I don't think it's going to be interesting. I think it would be horrific if it were to happen. But they're kind of looking forward to it because they're just like, hey, we get to go hang out in Jesus' mansion in the sky.
And people do weird things when they believe they're going to die.
Yeah, like, what was it, the Heaven's Gate people? They all castrated themselves?
Yeah.
Like, what?
Well, and, you know, like, or they just keep calm and they carry on. There's a story of one bakery in Hawaii where everybody felt like they were going to die, and they just kept making their bread that day. Mm. You know, they just kept going. Or I remember the movie The Titanic, which was, I guess this is a true story, that a lot of the couples just kept dressed up well and started dancing, and the musicians who played their musical instruments as the boat sank.
Yeah, and the four chaplains and the rabbi, they kept saying their prayers as the ship went down. You know, some of the people returned to their stateroom and just kind of laid down and accepted the inevitable. And it's, you know, there's a certain amount of grace with that and dignity that you have because you're like, listen, I can't change this, so let me just enjoy it.
And, you know, and so part of it, me, it's like when I'm reflecting about the Armageddon or the fear of Armageddon, or I'm sure there's a word for this, is, you know, and it was very much in the 19, I feel like with Trump in charge and a lot of sinister forces, you know, we're dealing with Russians, we're dealing with nuclear apocalypse, we're dealing with a totalitarian government. Instead of Russia and chaos, you know, it very much feels like we're back in the late 80s at the height of the AIDS crisis. And the only way to get out through it, again, is by making art, by being close to the people that you love and sharing and telling stories about it. And that's why we do this podcast. That's why we reach out to you guys day after day, week after week, year after year, to tell these amazing stories and to get you guys to come together, to reflect on these ideas, and not necessarily rush to judgment. I feel like social media is really wrecking the world that we live in, and it's pulling friendships and family members and communities apart in a way that's not healthy.
But it also is bringing people together too. So it's kind of a flip side. It's also, it's how you use it, how much do you use
it's
it, how do you rely on it. It's a tool for really making some great connections, but also too, like, they've done a lot of surveys, and the more time people spend on some of the social media, the more depressed they are.
Well, there's actually a nonprofit that's been created just to fight it's called Time Well Spent, dedicated to fighting back against the erosion of our mental health and democracy and relationships as caused by technology.
Interesting because we thought like technology would save our democracy, that we're, because especially with, we got Obama elected, things changed, we got the word out, the vote out, and then we see, you know, 8 years later, it's like the Terminator. It turns on you.
Well, and I always felt like link bait was going to be the tool that was going to bring about the modern apocalypse, so to speak. It was this idea that, you know, you remember Jenkum? What was Jenkum?
Jenkum was when you would put urine and feces into a jar and let it ferment, and then you could huff it and it would get you high. But it was a total bogus thing. But people everywhere fell for it.
Kinda, and they were angry about it.
And they were angry about it. They're like, oh, this is crazy. What are these kids? It's kind of like these kids that are chewing on the Tide Pods. Like, I don't think kids are really chewing on Tide Pods. Are they?
Well, kids are going to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And some kid somewhere is going to try something. If you give 100 monkeys a computer, or, you know, 100 monkeys, 100 computers, somebody's going to write Shakespeare and the other one's going to write Mein Kampf. And enough time on people's hands, something really outrageous and insane is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so, and the media, I mean, news organizations, websites that report on the news, seems like they're not be able to relying on listener support. They're not able to rely on advertising support. So they're sort of relying on link bait support. And that mm-hmm. is just making money by people clicking on those little, those weird, you know, the kids are these days are swallowing Tide laundry pods. Mm-hmm. What's the happening with the world? And so all, the Russians saw this, this tool, this phenomena that people were really happy to share link bait. And so when Oprah announced, we need to listen to women. Mm-hmm. Time's up. It's time to listen to women. The whole world said, whatever she said, she should be president. Mm-hmm.
Or she should not be president.
Or not be president. And people started weighing in on it. And that was link bait. But nobody was actually listening to Oprah. Mm-hmm. That was the irony of her speech, was she was...
listen to women. And then nobody listened to her. They just said she should be president or she should not be president. And people are listening to this right now and thinking, I think Oprah would make a great president. And then there's other people saying she would make a terrible president. But that's not what she's talking about. You know?
And, you know, let's cross that bridge mm-hmm. when we get there. Yeah. How about that? Mm-hmm. And part of it is that we're trying to normalize a tyrant mm-hmm. that is in charge, whose name is Donald J. Mm-hmm. Trump. So here's another story that was popping up today. Mary J. Blige got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Congratulations. She deserves it.
And she was filled with emotion, sharing her story to a supportive crowd. She said, there have been many times in my career that I didn't even want to step out of my house because I was hurt so bad. The singer talked about filing for divorce in 2016, revealing she was homeless at the time. She thanked music producer Jimmy Levine for taking her into his Malibu mm-hmm. mansion to weather the storm. Mm. And so people are like sharing the news story, not reading the article or listening to what Mary J. Blige actually said. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, Mary J. Blige was homeless. And I'm like,
well, that's what the titles all say. She was homeless last year. But it's like, let's really define what is homeless mean to Mary J. Blige.
It's living in somebody's Malibu home mm-hmm. or not having a place to live because you've sold your very expensive home.
Because she was living with somebody and she went to get a divorce. So she moved out of that. Yeah. She moved out of that place. So she had no home. So technically she was homeless. But let's, you know, what's the reality of that? Could she have gone to a hotel? Could she have rented an apartment? Did she have the money? Did she have the means? When I think about somebody who's homeless, I think about somebody who's living in their car. I'm thinking about somebody that has no means, that kind of thing.
I'm thinking about Sly Stone. Mm. You feel
what's
helpless.
What's happened with Sly Stone?
So Sly Stone is the leader of Sly and the Family Stone, mm-hmm. who is responsible for so many great songs like Life and Everybody is a Star. Mm-hmm. And
oh, yeah.
I mean, just some really great music. And I'm a huge fan of his work. And so I was like, what's Sly Stone doing these days? And so I searched on YouTube and found that he was struggling with drugs and he had huge money problems, living in near poverty in a Winnebago parked inside a friend's house. And, you know, he's been trying to get into recovery and he's, you know, and this is, you know, a sweet, beautiful man who's suffered tremendously. And it feels like some injustice that we get to enjoy his music while he's in some living hell that he's in today.
Oh, that's too bad.
And Mary J. Blige, you know, her music has inspired and, mm-hmm. and her story has inspired so many people. You know, in 2006, she went on Oprah talking about suffering at sexual abuse from a family member and living and overcoming drugs and alcohol abuse. Mm-hmm. And as a musician, that was a very risky move to make at that time period for her. And she's been a source of inspiration. You know, she's also somebody who's done a lot of quirky things creatively because she has a big heart and she says yes to everything. Right. 2011, she did Burger King's fried chicken
has
commercial.
Has it been
that long? In 2011.
Oh, wow.
We've and been, we've last been year,
that for 6 years, in sing the song for us. A little
crispy
bit.
Chicken, fried lettuce, wrapped up in a flour tortilla. And there was all this link bait of whether Mary J. Blige should have sung that song, whether Burger King was racist in doing this. Mm. You know, they paid her $2 million to do it. I think they could have handled the ad campaign a lot better. I thought did feel like blaxploitation for sure. Mm. But at the same time, if paying somebody $2 million to sing a song is exploitation, I'd like to be exploited too.
So sell anyway, you got into an argument with somebody on Facebook over this, right? Because somebody was like...
So Trent, the editor of Pinkus News blog, posted that. And I just said, you know, wow, like last year, because I hadn't read the article. And I just said, wow, last year, you know, the time that they were saying she was homeless, she was interviewing Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. For her talk show, the 411,
that she did for Apple.
She did for Apple Music. And I just thought, you know, I was like, wow, it's like here she is talking to somebody who could have been the nation's next president. And at that same time, she was dealing with her own personal demons. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I felt like Mary J. Blige had a sense of urgency when she grabbed Hillary Clinton's hands and sang to her. And Hillary Clinton was kind of startled by it. You know, she was like, I thought there was going to be an interview, and here you are singing right inches away from my
serenading.
Face.
Serenading. It's called serenading.
And you never, I've been in musical theater, you know, when someone sings close to your face, they're loud, you know, and you're not just aware of how much a person's voice carries when they're a trained vocalist like Mary J. Blige. And so I'm sure Hillary Clinton was like, holy shit, this woman can sing. And she didn't know how to react to it, you know. And it was I love the unusual nature of that interview.
It was really weird.
As an artist who takes journalism and interviews and plays it like clay, I just was delighted, and I thought it was funny, and I thought it was really fascinating seeing Mary J. Blige interview Hillary Clinton. And unfortunately, like, they didn't do anything with it afterwards. Like, that was a one episode show, and that was the end of it.
Oh, it was an orphan cast.
It was an orphan cast, and part of
so good they only had to make one.
And because she was struggling with her divorce, and she was struggling with finding a place to live. And you know, and I said to Trent, I said, it's like, it's just so heartbreaking when somebody who you adore as an artist is suffering through so much pain and suffering, and you feel like you want to do something, but they live in different worlds. And really, like, homelessness is a mental health, it's a healthcare, it's a social welfare issue that we, as Americans, are failing at. We suck at this. And I'm hoping that Mary J. Blige, by sharing her challenges with the public, will raise consciousness and will get people to vote in 2018, honey, because we don't need a blue... you know, election, we need a blue tsunami. We need
hopefully we'll get it.
We're gonna get it, honey, because it's terrifying. You know, it's like I'm gonna open up the bottle of wine, a coquito, and drink all of it.
How was your Christmas coquito?
It was delicious. We made it this year with an extra can of coconut milk, Thai coconut milk, and it just added this another layer of coconut magic. And then you found out about a recipe that makes the coquito taste good right away.
With chocolate. So we usually make a few bottles of coquito. Some we give to friends. Then we travel with it for the holidays. You know, I brought some home to Pennsylvania when I saw my family. Foster was supposed to take it to Texas, but he forgot. So luckily we had a little extra when I came back. But, you know, you make a bunch of it. And coquito, you can drink it right away. For those of you who don't know, coquito is... you can watch our video on how to make it, Cooking with Drag Queens Coquito. And it's a coconut and rum drink. And you make it, but then you want to store it in your refrigerator for a couple weeks, a week or 2 weeks, just to get the flavors to meld, and just is delicious after a few weeks. But you make it and you're like, oh my god, I want some right away, but you don't necessarily want to drink it right away because it, you know, it doesn't taste as good. So what we discovered is if you add a little chocolate to it, you could make the same thing, add chocolate to it, and it's very delicious. It's almost like a chocolate martini, like right out of the bottle.
And you can drink it anytime you like.
So
if you feel like those Hawaii missiles are coming over your head, glug glug glug.
Yeah, and so it was delicious, yeah. But how was your Christmas with your family? People, I'm sure, are wondering.
Well, we made food, and I slept, exercised, and cooked. I went down to Austin, Texas, and I got to see Gwendolyn, sweet Gwendolyn.
Oh,
and
lovely listener.
John Mark Robbins, who did a podcast with us from meth to yoga.
Mm-hmm.
And then back again. And he's
it's a struggle.
Recovery is a struggle. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, doing well, and she's doing great.
Mm-hmm.
I took this great photo of sweet Gwendolyn and her dog.
Mm.
She invited me to her home, and it reminded me of how much Austin, Texas, as a city, has, and Chicago, mm-hmm. have in this podcast. You know, we really celebrate not just artists, but people who put up posters of their favorite bands in their kitchen because they value live music.
Mm-hmm.
It's for people who collect erotic book covers and decorate their bathroom walls with it. It's for people who love culture and, you know, use every square inch of their home to reflect on that culture.
Well, that's what I really liked about some of the homes I've been in Austin is a lot of them, they felt like shrines. Like you walked into like a very spiritual kind of place. You know, it's like, you know, Dia de los Muertos things, you know, statues, little sitting spaces, places for you to kind of relax and be quiet and all sorts of things like that.
And so sweet Gwendolyn, she's a drag queen who she was.
Right? Or they?
I think she's comfortable with she or they. And so Sweet's putting on makeup in Sweet's and they's makeup room. So, but I'm trying to tell the story here.
Okay.
So there was a photograph of two young people's butts in that room, and I was like, sweet, whose butt is that? And she was like, that's Alaska's butt. And I totally had forgotten that Alaska used to take his clothes off.
Oh yeah.
When he was performing as a drag queen. And in fact, did that here in Chicago and almost caused the bar to get shut down. caused a commotion.
It's not that big.
Well, because, you know, a lot of bars have liquor licenses.
Yeah, you can't
and
show dicks
you
here.
Can't be show get people no. naked.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a consequence, and I was like, so I took a picture of that and texted it to Alaska. Mm-hmm. He's like, whose ugly ass is that? You're silly when you were young and fresh, honey. Mm. Now you're just a successful drag queen with millions of dollars.
I don't know about millions, but I hopefully. So.
She's got Bianca Bucks.
Well, Dora Delano, you know how Dolores was suing her?
Her manager.
Her managers are suing her now for like $180,000, something I read.
Girl.
You know, so, you know, it's like, I guess, I don't know how if she's, they're saying that she owes the money for things, for production and stuff.
You know, we've been friends with a lot of these people for many years, and every time they win, I go, I think when Alaska won, I said, hey, can I borrow $100,000? And she's like, sure. I didn't realize she was serious about it.
She just give it away.
You know, it's like, I was like, I guess they're fighting over a lot of money, and it's you know.
That's the nature of the business. It's, you know, when you.
Resolved.
When you, it's because it's a management company, but it's also a producer company, so they're producing things. And so that stuff all costs money. If you want to make a record, if you want to make a video, these tours, everything adds up. And so if she's only walking away with like, she's saying like 10 or 12% of like the money she's brought in, you know, I'm not in that business. So I don't know if that's a lot or not.
Now, my sweet family was there through the holiday season, but there was one member of my family who was missing.
Oh, who was that?
My dog, Jesse.
Aww. Because that's Jesse was with me. I took Jesse.
And you, silly. You're like, you should have said, and who else? You.
Well, obviously.
You were missing. You were so missed.
I'm sure. I did miss your family, but I thought it was important to spend some time with my family because especially there's been a death in the family, so I wanted to be there for that. So I drove down to Pittsburgh with Jesse in the car, and we spent a couple days in Pittsburgh. I got to hang out with my sister, and I got to see Amy Vodka House in Pittsburgh.
All new
Amy Vodka House.
Who's lost a ton of weight.
She looks fantastic.
She was a good friend with Alaska Thunderfuck, and they've done some videos together. And she's actually in a new movie that's coming out soon. I guess they wanted to use her song for it, and they're like, oh, we're also looking for a drag queen that can act in the film. Can you act? And she's just like, sure. So she's in it's a trauma film, and they did the
Toxic Avenger.
Toxic Avenger. So they produce a bunch of low budget horror films.
So it's now the Toxic Crossdresser.
She's murderous too.
Honey, she walks in those heels.
And I guess she has like a lesbian scene with an actress who's a B horror film actress. Like people that are into horror films would know her. I don't remember her name.
But now, I don't want to say I hate when people lose weight and people go, oh, you look so great. And I was like, what are you saying? That I looked bad before or something? And it's really insulting and stuff. But she seems happy. She seems vibrant. She seems really I didn't even recognize her. Yeah. Like when you were video chatting with me, you're like, guess who I have here? And I was like, I have no idea who this person is.
Well, the thing is too, is I was introduced to Amy with Sharon when I was in Pittsburgh, and she's just like, oh, meet my friend. She survived the Bosnian War or something. And she was like, she was this big hulking drag queen with this huge wig in heels, probably 6'4",
military soldier body.
No. I don't know why you would say that.
Well, because she was in a war.
Well, she
survived it.
She was not in the military, but she did. She did live through a war, but she was not in the military.
She was a paramilitary trooper that was dressed up in drag.
No, any more stories you want to invent? But no, so she was a big girl. So she was 300 some pounds. She's literally lost over 100 some pounds. So it's
always thought
it's
Amy Vodkenhouse had served in the war.
No, but she did have a crazy scar on her leg, because I guess she climbed out some kind of window and it cut her leg, so she's got these crazy giant scars up and down her leg.
So all this time I've been under the impression that Amy Vodkenhouse had murdered a man in the Bosnian War, and that she had crawled through mud and thunder what is that movie where the guy crawls out through the sewer to escape prison?
Shawshank Redemption.
Shawshank Redemption. She escaped a war-stricken country to become a fierce drag queen.
Amy's a little problematic, though, because, she her country lived through a war, and that war was, the Clintons presided over it. Bill Clinton was the guy who was during the war, so she hated the Clintons.
Oh.
And so she hated Hillary Clinton. And so guess what?
She's a Trump supporter.
Yeah. I don't know if she actually voted or not, but she certainly acted like she was going to vote for him. So,
well, it's like Roseanne's coming back on television. They're making Roseanne a Trump supporter. So, maybe this is just a new way of rebelling.
Maybe. And so after Pittsburgh, I went up to Erie and spent a couple days. I spent the holidays and Christmas with my family, and we got so much snow. Erie's got the most record. It's over 100 inches by now, but we got 52 inches of snow just on Christmas Day and the day after. I went to go pick up, my sister couldn't even leave her house, so I had to go pick her up. And our car has good wheels, good tires, but I only have front wheel drive, and Erie is basically on the side of a mountain, it's on a hill. And so it was hard to get to her. I was able to pick her up, and then I couldn't pick up my other sister because she lived on the other side of town and she was on more of a hill. And so we just kept driving around, circling, trying to get close, and there was car stuck here, car stuck there. And then finally, after an hour, I'm just call her and tell her we can't get her. And so I didn't even get my other sister.
She couldn't even take an Uber.
No, we couldn't get out of the house. Nobody was driving. They were telling people to stay at home. And so we saw her the night before, so it was okay. And she lives in a group home because she has Down syndrome, so she lives with people. And so she was surrounded by people that she lives with and loves. So we weren't too worried about it.
She had a very special Christmas.
Oh, you're terrible. And so anyway, the next day I was coming back to Chicago, and I was just like, I've got to get out. And I was just like, so I had to shovel myself out. And then I shoveled my sister out because she had all wheel drive, my other sister that was there. And I had her follow me to the highway to get there. I got stuck 4 or 5 times, but I was able to get myself unstuck because I grew up in this weather. So I know how to get out. And it was just traveling on I-90 was super slow moving. But once I got to Ohio, the lake effect snow was over, and I got back home. But the funny thing is, this is the longest Jesse's ever been away from home. while traveling, and the longest he's ever been in a car, and he's never ever slept in a car, because like we only take short trips around here, or maybe it's a couple of hours, and it took him 4 hours standing up in a car before he finally like laid down, and another hour before he even fell asleep.
And there's some great footage of Jesse running through the mountains of Erie.
And the thing about him, too, is like I couldn't leave him at home either because he whined so much. So my mother's like, your dog is whining. So I had to go back and pick him up. So my dog basically spent the entire Christmas vacation in my car.
When you were inside gay bars watching drag shows.
Exactly. Or when I was in a gay bar watching drag shows. And luckily the temperature was, you know, upper 30s and into the 40s. Like in Pittsburgh, it was 40s, and, you know, so it wasn't bad there. But I didn't keep him out there for too long.
And it's Amy Vodka House going, why do you have your puppy in the back seat of your car?
Because I couldn't leave him at my sister's either because there was construction going on. And I didn't want him, you know, it was easier for him to just stay in the car than it was to go anywhere.
Now, this is something that I sort of tapped on to drag queens. Mm-hmm. And this is there's almost a rebellious tone towards Drag Race. Like, because the queens who get on Drag Race have amazing financial careers.
They tier one drag queens.
Tier one. They're getting all these gigs. Mm-hmm. And some of them are really great artists and deserving of that. And some of them are not deserving of the attention they've been receiving.
But I think after a while, they kind of fall tier two or three. It's the ones that work and are artists and continue to put out good quality stuff still make the bucks.
And so some of them feel that way and some people don't. And so there's this like tension. There's love-hate relationship. Mm-hmm. When you tell a drag queen, hey, you should audition for RuPaul's Drag Race, mm-hmm. they'll just give you a nasty look. Mm. They'll be like, bitch, I'm in a trauma film. I'm in the toxic crossdresser too, you know?
Yeah, like, but some of those people, it's like, you know, they can't because they don't want their family to find out they're doing drag. There's also those drag queens that have criminal records, so they're not going to be able to do it. You know, there's a lot of reasons why drag queens don't want to be on that show.
Yeah, and maybe it's
and
like...
And so you being like, do that show, it's like, it's kind of like your mom being like, why don't you just find a nice girl and maybe you won't be gay anymore? You know, that's what it is to some of these drag queens.
So it is. It's totally that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Drag Race All-Stars 3 is just around the corner.
January 25th,
just days away. And, you know, this is the thing. Like, I'm really excited to watch it. And I think it's definitely going to boil down between Trixie Mattel and Shangela. Mm-hmm. But then Hot Topic is selling dolls mm-hmm. of RuPaul.
Alaska.
And Trixie Mattel. Mm-hmm. Those three.
So that goes to tell you right there who's going to be the winner of All Stars. It's going to be Trixie.
And I'm just like, can you guys like wait until at least a couple episodes in mm-hmm. before announcing that? And I'm hopefully, you know, we
hopefully
don't
Trixie
know.
Won't win? Is that what you're saying? I'm just saying
that hopefully we will be surprised mm-hmm. or it'll be a journey that we don't expect. Yeah. But when, mm-hmm. when, you know, marketing companies and merchandise companies sort of spoil it by mm-hmm. releasing all this merchandise way ahead of the game.
Well, remember, she also has that other TV show, too, with Katya.
So I'm hoping that's why they're doing it, you know.
Because you're hoping Trixie doesn't win. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'd be pleasantly surprised if Trixie wins.
I wouldn't be surprised at all. I mean, I'd be happy for Trixie.
I won't be surprised.
You know, but I would not be surprised. Because, you know, she's very talented. She's very funny. And Shangela, same. Very talented, very funny. So it's like, I'd be happy with either of them.
It's going to be a great mm-hmm. battle between a lot mm-hmm. of strong entertainers.
Yeah.
And it's certainly a show worth watching. Another show that a lot of people are sort of masticating on is Drag Race Thailand, which, from seeing the shots of the stage and the workroom, I was like, ooh. But, you know, these are Thai drag queens, and a lot of them are fierce. And so they just released the photos mm-hmm. of them mm-hmm. without identifying their names, which I thought was really weird.
I think some people have got the names down there somewhere. So you can follow some of them on Instagram.
And they're phenomenal, visually really striking.
Stunning.
Yeah.
You know, and I hate to, a lot of them just pass as women. You know, they really just, they just look like girls.
Well, when you're a skinny, young, gay man or person of indeterminate gender, it's easy to sort of make your gender malleable. Mm. It's like you're kind of like a Mr. Potato Head, only instead of, you know, putting on an eyes or a nose, you put on boobs and
like
a wig.
Like the transsex robots.
So, yeah, there's this company called Realbotics mm-hmm. that just announced this week that they're starting to sell transsex robots. Mm-hmm. And it's female robots with a little something extra. Mm-hmm. And so trans folks are very concerned because they feel that these robots are going to objectify humans. And I'm like, isn't that the whole point of robots?
Well, all sex robots are objectifying somebody. So, you know, welcome to the club. But, you know, it's like trans people don't want to be viewed as a fetish because they, you know, a lot of times people think of them as like, I don't want a relationship with them. I just want to have sex with them. They're a kink to me. I'm not really into it. So this is maybe just reinforcing that. But, you know, the thing is, it's men are attracted to the femininity of a trans woman, but they are also turned on by dicks.
Men are turned on by dicks. Robots are sex toys, and sex toys are meant to allow people to explore things, you know? Maybe, how do you know you want a dick up your butt? Is to get a dildo and put it up there in the safety, and you're in charge. You get to control where this experience goes. When you're having sex with another person, you might not, you have to negotiate with that other human being. A robot, well, you could throw the switch and turn it off.
You don't need consent. There's no hashtag me too going on with that robot. You just do whatever it is you want with that robot. And when you're done, you can throw it out.
You might need consent because they're also developing artificial intelligence for a lot of these robots. And so
I think we're far away from that for robots, for consent.
Realbotix says that their sex robots are the most realistic and most pleasurable to have a conversation with. So they're kind of like Alexa. You're like a smart speaker.
Sure.
You're like, I want to fuck you so good. And it's like, bling. Where would you like to fuck me?
What would you do? What would happen if you said, I want to fuck you real good to Siri? Do it.
Let's do it right now. I'm like, good Siri, question.
I want to fuck you real hard. Can I fuck you real hard, Siri?
Oh, is the speaker on? Why is this? I want to fuck you so good.
I'm not going to dignify that with a response.
So it's just just like a real person. So we asked Jeffrey J. like if he had some interesting jokes about this, and he said the robots are just like trans people to shut them down, so you have to misgender them.
What?
The robots are just like trans people. You can bring them out, but you're always scared they won't pass as a real human.
Oh, this is a Jeffrey J. a trans
Jeffrey
comedian
J. jokes. They are fierce as shit, and they will cut a bitch. So, I don't know. Jeffrey's trying to develop some material on the trans robot controversy.
And we just gave it. So also coming out of Thailand is penis whitening, I guess, is the latest trend in Thailand. Because sometimes...
Why would you want to whiten your penis?
Well, because sometimes penises can be very dark compared to the rest of your skin. So your nipples... And your penis or your labias, whatever, are kind of, you know, how they're a different color than the rest of your skin. And that has to do with the hormones that are released. So testosterone and estrogen control, like, the color of your penis and or your nipples, your areolas. And so for some people, you know, Thai people, for the most part, they're rather fair. You know, as people go. But sometimes, you know, their men's penises are very, very dark.
Yeah.
And so they get laser surgery on it.
I don't want a laser down my nuts.
Basically, that zaps the melanin in there. So it'll lighten it over time. And so I think you have to do like many procedures to do it. And it's not a super popular one. And a lot of people are like, why are you kind of doing this? And people are like, this is crazy. But I mean, it's the same kind of thing. Why do you get plastic surgery? Why do you get your breast augmentation? Who's going to see it? But, you know, for some people, it's like they want the penis to match their skin color.
I just rather have sex with a robot that's going to accept me for who I am. And if it doesn't, I'll go return and buy a new one.
But I always wondered because like my dick's darker than the rest of my skin on my body. And I always thought to myself, why is it darker?
You're brown. It's not because, you know, you got a nice brown.
It's not because it's stuck up your poop shoot. Is that what, is that why?
Well, you have a nice, beautiful brown penis.
Oh, thank you.
And
it's not as brown when it's hard. Because it stretches the color out.
But yours is darker. Mine's lighter. And I don't, you know, it's like, all penises are beautiful.
No, not all penises are beautiful.
Most of them are.
No, not all. Most of them. Some are beautiful. Some are not beautiful.
Are you going to tell, you hook up with somebody and you're like, would you tell it to their face? They're like, listen, your penis is not to my taste.
Listen, you've hooked up with people or you've seen penises that were not attractive to you. And you've seen other penises and you're like, that dick looks good.
A penis is just one part of a man's body.
Yes, but that's the part we're talking about right now.
And you know, it's like if the rest of the body is beautiful and the penis looks like, you know, Hitler's face, I'll be okay with that.
Yeah.
In fact, some porn stars do shave a little square patch of hair above their genitals, mm-hmm. and it's called a Hitler mustache down there. That's a true thing. Google it.
Well, it's not also a Brazilian.
Brazilian. But the landing strip. They were used to call it the landing strip.
You know, that stuff used to be real more popular in the 90s and stuff, in like the early 2000s, and everybody was into manscaping and shaving and being hairless. But now everybody's just like, let your freak flag fly.
That's right, folks. So David Letterman interviewed Barack Obama for, I guess he's back.
He's back as a talk show host. You just can't get away from being a talk show host sometimes. It's in your blood.
I've tried to get away from being an interviewer.
You know, and people have tried to cancel you, and it just doesn't happen.
But no, I mean, every job that I've ever had in my life, I've found myself sort of having to interview people or have a conversation to some capacity as a journalist or as a even as an artist or whatever. And so Martin Luther King Jr.'s holiday is today, and to celebrate, David Letterman reflected on the civil rights struggle with President Obama and Representative John Lewis. And so they crossed that famous bridge and went into the museum in Selma, Alabama, to look about the history of the civil rights movement and, you know, how the repeal of the Voting Rights Act really set people back 50, 100 years. And, you know, it was really great to see David Letterman and Obama again, and it made you just miss them tremendously. I mean, David Letterman's been such a profoundly inspirational, influential comedy figure to me and so many people. And it was great to see Santa Dave with his long beard like Moses interviewing probably one of the greatest presidents that we have.
Ever, for sure.
Yeah, at least in recent memory, for sure.
It was a fun conversation. It was good to see somebody like Dave back in the saddle again, talking to somebody with such prestige, the president. And the president really kind of just giving Dave a hard time. I'm surprised he didn't say, you know, you wouldn't survive this Me Too thing if you were still on the air right now.
I think that's, you know, depressing and difficult and sad. And David Letterman was... he was blackmailed for having sex with his one of his assistants, I guess.
Assistants or something. Was that how it went down?
So he and his assistant were fine with it. Somebody got a hold of it, the information.
Oh, is that how it went down?
And he was being blackmailed by a third party. At least that's how I remember it.
Okay. I don't really remember the details, but I remember people saying that it was an inappropriate workplace situation.
That's why you don't have, no matter how sexy your coworkers are, you don't have sex with them. And if
what if
you
it's
do,
a temp job?
Well, you'd be prepared to quit. You know, and part of it is like, if you're hiring somebody, it's like, I mean, you're better off getting on Craigslist than hiring like a... you know, shirtless maid or something to, you know, it's like sex work is still work and it is deserving. And if you know, of respect and rights. And at the same time, you know, if you're in a workplace environment, being, you know, having a sexual relationship with another person can cause a whole wide variety of problems. And there's plenty of hot people in this world. You do not need to fuck your coworkers or your managers or your
sometimes they're the only ones around you can fuck, right?
Well, that's the thing. You work so, you know, a lot of people work, you know, 80 hours a week in their jobs, and the only people they know are their coworkers. And certainly people in entertainment, you know, it's a very intimate environment, so it's natural to fall in love with your coworkers. But things like this happen.
Things happen.
Be prepared to quit.
Be prepared to quit. So a team of scientists have invented an ingestible electronic capsule that you can swallow, and it will monitor the gas levels in the human gut. And so it's a
little... So mine will go...
So it'll track your fart in real time. It'll see like how things go. It measures like temperature. They have CO2, H2, and O2. And they look at it, and so it has a little battery power inside. And eventually you poop it out. You know, and they gave it to one guy. They gave him a high fiber diet, and it took like 23 hours for the pill to pass. And but they gave him a lot of fiber too, so it kind of like, I guess it messed up like his CO2 levels in his bowels. But then they put him on a low fiber diet, and it took him over 36 hours to pass it. So that's like, you're looking at, what is that? How many days is that?
That's a long time.
That's a long time.
You know, my birthday's coming in April. Mm-hmm. Forget about 23andMe. I don't care if I'm related to Hitler or not. I want to get one of those high-tech poop pills and just see what happens. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, I've heard that there are some people, and this is an urban legend. You know what a vampire is, right?
Yeah.
What does a vampire do?
A vampire sucks blood.
Why are they sucking the blood?
Because that's the life force that sustains them.
It gives them immortality, right? Yeah. So there's poop vampires. And there's people who believe that they're going to stay young by getting regular infusions of fecal matter from young, healthy people who have not been exposed to antibiotics. And so they're getting the poop pills into their own digestive gut.
Oh, really? I mean, I heard that they do that, the fecal transfers. Is that becoming more and more popular now?
But this is beyond the next level. Mm-hmm. So it's not a fecal transfer. It's people who have no irritable bowel syndrome or anything like that. But they're like, you know, holistic vegans going too far who get poop transfers,
but poop transfers
from people, you know, they kidnap people and force them to poop at gunpoint to get their sweet feces inside their gut.
But people that have like that, what is it? The irritable bowel syndrome. Like I even think like Crohn's disease, some of those things, people have like sworn by those fecal transfers and being like, it saved their life because they were just having miserable shits. And then they got their bacterial, the flora back up there, the flora, right? Bacterial
flora. Flora and fauna, the two good witches in Sleeping Beauty. Mm-hmm.
And so they, you know, they got their gut back together and it helped them. And also, too, you know, your intestinal health, they say, is so important. They're saying that your intestines now, your guts are like your second brain, that it helps with serotonin levels. There's so much going on there. So if you are constipated, if you do have problems down there, it's like, you know, see a doctor.
So the remake of Dracula is going to be really shitty.
Mm-hmm.
That was a joke. You're like,
shitty. It
so
will
was
be
your
shitty.
Joke about that. But no, there's other people who are getting blood transplants from young people because of the human growth hormones and all the stuff. So well, they can stay younger longer.
They said that it was one of those things too, is like they do those vampire blood transfusions and that it can remedy a lot of the health problems. They started out in mice doing it, but they've also figured out though too, is like once you stop with those blood transfers, the benefits go away. So it's a very short term effect. You know, so it's something you'd have to do continually, and what young person wants to give up their blood continually?
That would be fun. And, you know, if somebody wanted regular poop transplants or blood, I think the poop transplant would be easier than the blood ones, because everybody poops, right? Mm-hmm. As the children's book says.
Yeah.
But not everybody, you know, likes to lose 5 or 6 pounds of blood just to keep, you know, President Trump alive, for example. I'm sure Trump is getting that done, you know? You know, speaking of my favorite immortal, Jesus Christ, NBC has announced they're going to be bringing Jesus Christ Superstar, the musical by Andrew Lloyd Webber, to television for Easter.
Ooh,
and John Legend and Alice Cooper have been signed.
What's Alice Cooper going to play?
King Herod.
Alice Cooper is going to play King Herod?
Yeah.
Isn't Alice Cooper like 80?
Well, that's what, because he's freaky and old and, you know, he's Alice Cooper.
Oh, wow.
And John Legend.
King of the Jews.
If you want to see the best production of Jesus Christ Superstar is the film adaptation.
Well, a lot of people disagree with that.
And part of it is I love it is just it's sweaty, cracked out hippies dancing in the desert. Mm-hmm. And you just know filming that movie was super uncomfortable. Like, they're just, like, spazzing out, and they're like, Jesus, 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 God, I love you, Jesus, you know, Jesus Christ, I love you, did you see I wave, I believe in miracles, so tell me that I'm saved, you know, it's just, there's so much energy and so much passion in that musical, and I would argue that's one of Andrew Lloyd Webber's best musicals, so I'll be definitely watching that.
And it's going to be on Easter?
For Easter weekend. I'm not sure it'll be on Easter, but, you know, they've sort of hinted at a teaser.
Who's playing Jesus? Do you know?
I don't know. As if it's Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar is kind of a boring character, right? Yeah. Simon Zealots or Judas are the two kind of big vocal dynamic numbers. And sort of Judas, I mean, sings half the songs in the, you know, Yeah. From Jesus Christ Superstar to There's a Trouble of Brewing in the beginning. And
so you do What's the Buzz too?
I'm not sure who sings What the Buzz is. Tell Me What's Happening. Of course, there's the Mary Magdalene. Everything's all right, just everything's fine. And it's good and the ointment's sweet
for your hands.
What? I don't know how to love him. What to do, how he moves me. He's just a man. So it's going to be a heck of a lot of fun. I can't wait to see that. And as RuPaul would say, can I get an amen up in here?
Amen.
It's going to be a really great year in 2018. We have a fantastic show this week. We're taping with Brian Sweeney and Collette for part two of
Star Trek.
Star Trek in the Mirror Universe, where we're introduced to Andorians.
Ooh, blue Andorians. Look pretty sexy, I'd have to say.
Well, that's not the ones from the TV show. That's a photo of me dressed as an Andorian feeding George Takei apple pie. This actually did take place one point in time, and that photo of me with George Takei dressed up as an Andorian was all over the internet for a long time. And I got to recycle that again. Some shady friend of ours was like, how old were you in this photo?
Why do they say that?
I don't know. And I'm just like, listen, it's a timeless photo, you know?
It was the past 14 years.
But George K. looks younger today than he did in that photo.
Oh, really?
Because he wasn't wearing hardly any makeup.
Oh,
whereas I was painted to filth, honey.
And then we also have another podcast coming up with Karen from Finance, one of Australia's premier drag queens. We got to meet her at the Austin International Drag Festival. So we got to kiki with her about that and how she came about with her name and her career and all some other things about Australian and their animals that try and kill you down there.
She managed to bring RuPaul's Drag Race to be aired live in Australia, where beforehand they had to like pirate it, and the TV stations showed it like a year later back when, you know.
It was crazy, yeah.
And so she got it shown in real time in her country because of that. She's a shero.
And then also Robin Pinocchio, who writes for Wonkette, is going to come and talk about. She's had a couple of stories that have really gone viral the last year, so we're going to talk to her about that, and that's coming up this week as well.
I'm excited. Of course, we have lots of. We're actually currently filming episodes of Cooking with Drag Queens. And if you have any drag queens or ideas for our episodes, please mail them at mail@feastoffun.com. We're on social media, Feast of Fun on Twitter and on Facebook. And of course, Mark and I are on Instagram and Facebook as well in our personal accounts. And we'd love to hear from you guys.
And if you want to suggest a guest for the podcast, we're always open to ideas. You can mail it at mail@feastoffun.com or just hit me up, mark@feastoffun.com. That's Mark with a C. Or Fausto@feastoffun.com. But, you know, send it to me because I do most of the scheduling. And then, you know, just tell us who they are, what they're all about, and what kind of things we can talk to them about. And if you think they'd be a good fit for us, you know, they probably are.
But help us understand why you think that, because if you just say, hey, my friend David, he would be great. He's really funny. And you're like,
well, if you just Google him, you'll know. And you're like, well,
it's so hard because it's like, I want to work with this person. I want to make it easy. But if the person's just like this labyrinth wrapped up in an enchilada, wrapped up in a Russian doll, wrapped up in a lockbox. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know what.
We need help decoding because, you know, most talk shows, they have staff of people that work for them. So sometimes it's hard to unpack what that is. And sometimes there's a real good nugget there. And we just need help finding it, you know?
You know, when you get on Oprah, I think it's like six people interview you before Oprah interviews you. So they vet them out. And so, you know, when you're listening to this podcast, just like us, we don't know what kind of crazy shit's going to come out of people's mouths. But that's why you listen to it.
Yeah, that's why you listen to it. That's why you support it. And remember, the best way to support this show is to become a Plus member. If you're not a Plus member yet, I encourage you to sign up at feastoffun.com/plus because your contribution to the show is what makes it happen. If you have been a membership, if you had a membership and it lapsed and you need help reconnecting, let me know. I can help you out.
Celebrate Martin Luther King Jr.'s legacy by embracing diversity in all your facets of life. Invite people that are not like you to be your friends and open up your heart and your minds to new experiences and delicious flavors. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Fausto Furnos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Bye, everyone. Bye-bye.